Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Duwana Koloshkova, and I represent Emerald Hills Homeowners Association, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. We'd like to thank the Court for your review of this case, particularly this panel, as we recognized you are especially well-suited in light of both the Saunders and the Bloom cases to address both the interpretation of height covenants as well as when such a case is ripe for review. As this Court recognized in Bloom, interpretation of a covenant in a vacuum, in particular, whereas here, where we have no building plans for the proposed structure that could be built based on the plaintiff's perspective of the height covenant, risks opening what is effectively a Pandora's box as a result of an advisory opinion. Unless and until this Court is presented with a mature controversy, neither party can tell this Court that all potential issues would be resolved as a result of this Court's or a superior court's final decision.
Well, isn't the respondent simply asking for a declaration as this is the point where you do the measurement? I mean, isn't that really all we have to decide?
Your Honor, no, it is not. And that is because, and actually I think that Bloom, I think it's rare where we get a case that really, or a couple cases, frankly, that are so incredibly useful for purposes of a land use dispute such as a height covenant. On the face of it, I think that that is an attractive way to look at the case, to say, easy, we're just asking in the abstract. But the board and the Architectural Control Committee's job is not merely to implement one single phrase out of a complete set of covenants, conditions, and restrictions. There is the entirety of the architectural review process, which is not only height in the abstract at a pinpoint. It is a question of the complete bulk and dimensional standards, as well as the aesthetics, that the Architectural Control Committee and the Board are charged with reviewing. And if this Court simply takes one phrase out of the complete set of CC&Rs and out of the entirety of the height covenant itself, I believe that this Court then risks doing exactly which Bloom cautions against, which
Let
is
me
that
ask
advisory
you about what
opinion.
The court ordered. Was it the plaintiff's request that they be allowed to measure from the point on the curb at the northernmost point of the lot or the southernmost point of the lot?
The plaintiff's argument was that they should be able to measure at their whim.
I understand
their will.
That, but the trial court ordered and actually referenced, meaning it could be this or that. And it was it the northernmost point that it gave them the most advantage?
I believe it's the southernmost point.
The southernmost point? The southernmost point has the highest elevation.
It's the highest elevation, of course. And the record reflects this going back to when
So if you're standing, let's say it's the southernmost, and I'll talk with the opposing counsel about this too. So if you're standing at that point and you're looking west, because you're supposed to be on 12th Avenue looking west according to the covenants, are you staring down the lot line?
May I grab the map?
Sure.
Thank you.
I mean, it seems to me you would be staring down the lot line.
I believe the court would be correct. And again, I'm looking at page 196 of the record, and that reflects Highland Drive, which is to the east, and then, 12th Avenue to the east, Highland Drive to the west, and then you have all of the lots there.
If you're at the southernmost point on the curb, that's still in front of plaintiff's property, you're staring down the southern lot line, right?
You would be staring, actually, if you were at the southernmost point of the curb and you were on 12th Avenue, you would be looking west across lot 23.
At the lot line, right?
At the lot line.
Yeah, so if you if you dropped a baseball with your left hand, it would fall on the neighbor's yard. If you dropped a baseball with your right hand, it would fall on the plaintiff's yard.
Roughly, yes.
Okay.
But, Your Honor, the issue here, again, the problem that we have with discussing this covenant in such abstract is because, or excuse me, the covenant language in such abstract without the plans, is that the job of the Homeowners Association Board is much broader than simply implementing one phrase out of the complete set of covenants. The job of the Homeowners Association is to look at both the collective intent, as I've talked about extensively.
So you're saying if we simply decide the point of measurement, you'll be back here later with another case?
I don't know. Because
but that case isn't ripe now because there aren't plans, and we can't decide bulk decisions at this point.
I would completely agree with this court that we cannot decide this without the plans. The only set of plans in front of this court right now is the set that was approved based on the Nemergut's acquiescence.
So isn't the only issue the interpretation of the covenant as to what place to measure the height?
That is the issue that the Nemergut's have brought to this court, and what we would respond with is that unless this court takes a look at that complete set.
Let me ask you a different question then that's related. Do you agree that the Superior Court judge properly applied a plain language analysis in reaching her conclusion?
No, I do not.
And why not?
And I do not believe that because I believe that the Superior Court did not correctly interpret and apply the Saunders case with respect to both the paramount importance of the homeowner's collective intent, which has been reflected for 5 years now, in consistently by all of the proceedings that have led to this appeal, as well as the drafter's intent. And the problem with the Nimmergut's position, we believe, is that they're asking this court to look at one phrase out of a complete height covenant.
Well, given that there's different height measurements for different lots, if the court is wrong on this and they admitted extrinsic evidence, what would be the measurement point?
The measurement point would be the center of the lot, as with all of the other lots except for those on corners, for
right,
example.
Except for those on corners. So there are exceptions.
There are exceptions. However, those exceptions were expressly identified with a pinpoint location. So though there isn't a circumstance where, for example, those corner lots were at the property owner's discretion. And that, Your Honor, we would posit is the problem with the Nimmergut's position.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Carl Hausman, representing the respondents, Kurt and Eileen Nimmergut.
So is it the southernmost point or the northernmost point that's most favorable?
It's the southernmost
point. It's the southernmost point. And if you're standing at that point, you're looking down the lot line.
Correct.
Okay. So let me ask this then. The covenants reference in various spaces, in various places, the fact that the city of Edmonds has a land use code.
Correct.
And that these restrictions or obligations are in addition to anything that Edmonds would impose.
Correct.
Right? So we know that the declarant in drafting these covenants was aware of the land use
code. In fact, the covenants say, if we haven't identified a point of measurement, you refer to the Edmonds code.
So Edmonds has setback requirements, right?
Correct.
Okay. So why is it logical to believe that the drafter of the covenant intended to measure a building's height at a place where a building could not exist?
Good question, Your Honor. The covenants also specifically reference corners of lots, and I guess the same analysis could be applied to those restrictions, because in those houses, those lots also, the home is not right to the corner of the lot yet.
You're talking about corner lots or corners of lots?
Corners of lots. The height restriction, Section 2, for most of the restrictions, it is from the center of a lot, but for several, it is from a corner of the lot.
And aren't those corner lots?
I don't know if I haven't looked at each one of
it
those
looks
lots.
It looks to me like those are corner lots. In other words, lots on the corner.
Even
where
so,
two streets intersect, meaning that there's two curbs.
Sure, but even so, the house is not built on the property line, and the elevation.
Well, no, but if you're facing the corner where the two curbs come together, and you're facing it, then you're looking right, there's the house. And the house is where it's supposed to be. It's meeting all setbacks.
But
if you're standing on 12th, right, and you're at the southernmost point, and you're looking down the lot line, the law doesn't allow a house to be there.
Correct.
So why would we measure the height of a building from a place where the law doesn't allow the building to be, as opposed to construing it some other way so you're measuring the height of the building at a place where the law would allow the building to be?
A couple of points. It's a practical building question, and engineers and surveyors and
well,
builders.
It's not a practical building. Nobody can build on the lot line.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
So why would we look down the lot line?
Well,
to measure the height of the house that's on the lot line when it can't be there.
Well, one reason is that the lot lines, it is easy to measure where that height is on the road, or in this case on the top of the curb. And as I say, engineers and builders reference building points that are away from their building all the time.
Where according to a plain reading of the covenant is the location from which you can measure the height?
I'm sorry.
Where, according to a plain reading of the covenant,
right,
is the location, because the covenant refers to a location, is the location from which you can measure the height?
Well, the covenant says the top of the curb, as the lot faces
west. That's where you measure from.
Right.
But that's not the location.
Correct.
That's where you start from. Where's
right.
the location?
Well, as pointed out in the panel's case that I've cited, because the...
I'm asking a plain reading. We don't need court cases.
Okay.
This is a plain...
I agree with
plain
you.
Plain meaning.
I agree that it's
so
not...
We're just looking at the words of the covenant.
Right.
So where on the covenant does it say where the location is
right.
from which you can measure?
Well, Your Honor, I disagree with you that you need to find a specific location. If the drafter...
No, the covenant says a location.
Well,
it says the location is set forth.
Right, and in some it says the corner, and some it says the center point.
Okay,
but
so what does it
ones,
say for this? What's the location?
It says neither of those things.
Okay.
So
how would, just using plain language, then how do you know where to put the tape measure?
It says the lot, and I guess I'd say anywhere on that lot.
Well, that's adding language to the covenant now. That's not in the covenant.
I disagree. A lot means a lot, and whether that's the center point or a midpoint or a side point, it's still the lot.
So you think that there's no... The plain meaning of the covenants as a whole is that where it says the location... And where everybody else it says the midpoint or the center point or the corner, the location actually doesn't mean anything. That's a null term.
Well,
I think
location doesn't need to mean a pinpoint. A location can be a lot.
Well, what does it mean, the location?
Well,
just a general area?
When the drafter has chosen to put it on a pinpoint, the drafter did that, whether that's the midpoint or the corner point.
The covenant sets forth a vantage point facing west on 12th Avenue.
Yes.
And it sets a point from which it is measured, the top of the curb.
Right.
Where is the location that's referenced in the covenants themselves for these particular lots,
right,
including yours?
Unlike the restrictions that do identify a center point or a midpoint, this does not identify a specific location.
If we're going to give credence to the whole idea of the collective interest,
right,
wouldn't there have to be some incorporation of the total approach here in terms of midpoints and measuring points as opposed to this particular lot? I hope I'm making myself.
I do. Well, it's a combination of those two ideas. I think what you're saying is there must have been an omission, that the drafter must have missed something. And that's where I say look at that entire section 2 and look at how that restriction for lots 19 through 23 compares to the other. It says as facing west. The others use different language, and the drafters, we can't, I think it's a jump to say that there must have been an omission. I think
the heights that are allowed differ from lot to lot, or from sets of lots to other sets
Correct.
Of lots. And presumably, we can assume some rationality on the part of the declarant here. Presumably, that had a purpose. Some
right.
purpose was to be sought by imposing these varying heights.
Right, not just...
And the heights
right.
were arrived at by the declarant by measuring from some point
right.
on the lot to determine what should be the height allowed, because it's not a uniform. It's not everybody gets 27 feet. Some people get 17.
Correct.
So something's being measured. And so for all of these other lots, it was being measured from either the center point or the corner. But from your lot, it was just measured from somewhere.
From the lot.
And they just arrived at a set of feet, and it could be 6 feet difference. Unlike all of these other lots where it's real specific, it could be a 6 feet difference because... as long as you're looking west.
It could be. It could be. That's the way the drafter wrote it. And what we're asking is that
that's the, in fact, that's the plain meaning analysis the trial court went into.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're running out of time. Equitable estoppel.
Right.
Why can't we decide that issue on appeal?
You can.
And why wouldn't the respondents be equitably estopped given the actions that they took in the case?
Well, this isn't the kind of thing that this isn't the kind of a promise. I will do this if you do that, or I promise I will do this thing. Somebody relies on that. What if you look at what the statements are that are asserted as the admission or the statement from the homeowners association perspective, they refer to an email that the Nimmergoods said, we will comply with the height restriction. They don't say we will comply with the erroneous height restriction. They don't say we will comply with an average height restriction. They say we will comply with the height restriction.
Well, so it was a meaningless promise. It was misleading.
No, I think this is...
Well, they had to comply with the height restriction, right?
With a
covenant.
Right. Well, and I think...
So they're just promising to do what they're already legally obligated to do?
Well, I think looking at... I think it's Mr. Hoxie's declaration. He said, I relied on them complying with the height restrictions. They are. As the Superior Court decided, we are reading the interpretation, we are reading the covenant correctly, and the Homeowner Association was reading it incorrectly. The Nimmergoods are permitted to build their home as high as the restriction permits.
Wouldn't you take that email in conjunction with the plans that they actually submitted to determine the equitable estoppel?
Sure. If you do, I still question whether that's the type of promise and the type of reliance that equitable estoppel can be built on.
Isn't there a question of fact?
On the estoppel issue?
They submitted plans. They said they'd comply. The plans they submitted
had
were
expired.
Consistent with the other party's understanding of the height limit. Somebody else then, who was a member of the other party, relied.
Their plans had expired. I don't think that's the clear. Equitable estoppel requires clear, cogent, and convincing evidence. That's not enough to beat summary judgment. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. And I appreciate the court's further discussion of its questions, because I think perhaps what the court is getting to with respect to the locational conversation that Your Honor has had with both counsel, the answer to the question where we have something that is not a model of clarity, we readily recognize that as far as this phrase of the height covenant is concerned. That does not mean or not equate to the determination being at the sole discretion of a single lot, Lot 23, to...
What about the evidence that it was inconsistently applied? I mean, that's what they were arguing is, it's all well and good to say, let's admit extrinsic evidence. Here is the way we always measure it, except the facts are different. We don't always measure it.
Your Honor, that's a point that has been blown significantly out of proportion. In fact, the Nimmergoods' own evidence includes letters from the 80s that talk about measuring from the center line. And
this is summary judgment. Isn't there a question of fact presented whether or not the Emerald Hills Homeowners Association abandoned the covenants by allowing other people to build from the average?
Your Honor,
question of fact, is it right?
It is a question of fact. To the extent that the court concludes there are undisputed facts, we do not believe that it rises to the threshold that was placed by the Sandy Point case, for example, where in that case there was actual significant violations of the covenants here. We have 32, I believe, homes regulated by this height covenant, two of which are questionable.
Significant or not, we're down to fact questions, aren't we?
Ultimately,
when we talk about reasonable or significant.
Ultimately,
like that,
yes, I would concede to that, absolutely. And the likewise is the same with equitable estoppel, Your Honor. This case absolutely concerns a question of a commitment, and in fact, an express and unambiguous from our position.
Well, the
commitment.
Trial court never actually ruled on the defense. Right?
That's right, Your Honor. The trial court punted that.
It didn't enter partial summary judgment. It entered summary judgment.
It did, and yet it said we're not ruling on. And that is our position, is that this case is not complete in terms of the equitable estoppel arguments.
Well, it was complete. The question is whether it should have been complete.
Excuse me. Yes. Thank you, Your Honor. What I would like to clarify, though, going back to the original question, is that the height covenant, as the court points out, it does talk about a specific location, and it could have said for certain specific lots, this would be at the homeowner's election. It does not say that. And this court has decided consistently.
That's the missing term that was supplied by the Superior Court.
That would be what the court injected, but that is not consistent with drafters' intent when this court looks at the entirety of the height covenant, not just a single phrase.
Whether it's consistent with the drafters' intent is a different question from whether it's consistent with a plain language analysis.
Your Honor,
if you're inserting a missing term, you're not engaged in reading the plain language of the document.
Your Honor, I would refer back to the Saunders decision on this point because it struggled with very similar issues.
Okay. We'll do that. Thank you for your
time. Thank you, Your Honor.